Today's program has been brought to you by Le Creuset. Visit Le Creuset for cast iron and stainless cookware, bakeware, pots, pans, and kitchen and bar tools. For more information, visit www.lecreuset.com. That's LECREUSET.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Sharp and Hot. This is episode 19. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, broadcasting live to you on heritageradionetwork.org from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I will say at the top of the show that I hate using food metaphors as someone who calls themselves a food writer. It seems kind of lazy and easy. It's an easy metaphor for me to use, but we're pretty much literally sandwiched between major snow events that are dumping massive amounts of accumulation on the Northeast, and there appears to be a bullseye on my little farm. If you are listening to this in the time machine of iTunes or Stitcher, today is February 4th. Yesterday, we got 8 inches of snow. Tonight, we are going to get 8 inches of snow, and over the weekend, we are forecast to have another 8 inches of snow. Or, you know, give or take, 1 or 2 inches here or there doesn't really matter. And there's no snow melt in between. And so I'm looking at potentially 24 inches of snow by Monday morning out my window. And the groundhog said there's plenty more to come. And so in putting together today's show, I got to thinking about the power of food and the food and cocktails, sort of the culinary world, and its ability to transport you far, far away from where you are. And so today, I'm going to use this 30 minutes of Sharp and Hot to take us all on a tropical vacation using the power of sound and the power of food and the power of a good tropical cocktail. I would be going on an actual vacation, except that the bandana that I'm wearing, you can't see this, but I'm wearing a bandana. I almost wore a bikini under my clothes, but I figured that was too much. But I'm wearing a bandana that I bought on one of my many trips down to St. John, which if you can afford to fly there, you can camp in your own tent for $20 a night right on the beach that looks like it's straight out of a postcard. But I got this bandana back when I didn't care what credit card companies thought of me, and so now I'm paying for some of those vacations still. There's a little family trauma happening in my life, and my dad gave me his credit card number over the phone to pay a bill for him. And I asked if my fee in helping him work through some of the stuff that's going on is if I could buy a couple of plane tickets to take Mark and James, my husband and my kid, down to St. John for a couple of days. And he said, my dad said no. So the next best thing between the snowstorms and the family drama and not having enough money on the credit card so that American Express can say, sure, take a vacation, is bringing the vacation to you. And so let's start with some beautiful beach music. Here we go. Evan and I are working together in a way we never have before through this window here. And that went, I think, seamlessly. There's a little steel drumming, some waves in the background, a little bit of MIDI. I stopped at the corner grocery store here, and I'm going to open up my coconut air freshener that I have. Again, I almost put on some sunblock, but I decided that was going to make me feel depressed, and so instead I have this incredible smell of coconut. I might as well be breathing in some Hawaiian tropic. And next we need a tropical cocktail. I brought in my cocktail shaker to the studio with me, and I'm going to share with you my very favorite cocktail recipe from the Virgin Islands. It is called a painkiller, and man, if that 10-day forecast doesn't make you want one of these, you must be one of those skier snowboarder people. Okay, so the first thing I'm going to do is take my cocktail shaker and I'm going to fill it with a couple of ice cubes. And then I'm going to put some fresh ice into a couple of cups, one for me and one for Evan. And we're going to measure in our liquids. This drink is made all over the Caribbean. So let's see. I've got 4 ounces of Pusser's rum. And we're going to pour that on top of our ice. And then I've got 4 ounces of pineapple juice. That's going to go on top. Then I've got 4 ounces of coconut milk. You can use Coco Lopez for this, and this is Coco Lopez is probably what you're going to get if you were to order this in a bar. But if you look at the ingredients on the Coco Lopez bottle, you'll notice it's pretty far from an actual coconut. So what I like to do is go to the international food section and buy a can of unsweetened coconut milk from like the Thai section and use that instead. Just give the can a really good shake before you open it. And you probably want to dump it out into a bowl and whisk the separated fat from the liquid back together again. And then finally, 2 ounces of orange juice. So that's all in my shaker now. Then I'm going to open my, I have a fresh nutmeg here, and I have a microplane, and I'm going to grate about 10 scratches of nutmeg into this cocktail. And that sort of is what makes this drink. And cocktail, lid goes on, top goes on, and then we shake. Oh, that sounds so delicious, and I haven't even tasted it yet. Okay, now I'm going to strain my cocktail into the 2 cups that I put clean ice in. Leave the ice that was in the shaker and strain the drink into your 2 glasses. There's one. Oops. There's the other. And garnish with a slice of orange, like a little half moon of orange. And if you like them, maraschino cherries, I don't like them. Even the, like, quote-unquote real ones that come in the number 10 can from Italy, I've really tried to like those, and my friends love them, but they're just not my thing. But piece of orange, and then I have a straw here that is red and white striped. And now I'm going to take a sip. Oh, between that and the music and my coconut air freshener scenting the whole studio, I'm really almost there. I'm really almost there, and I'm really happy to have you with me. I feel more laid back already. Okay, so let's see. So this is the official drink of the British Virgin Islands. There's a small bar on a very tiny island off Tortola called Joost van Dijk. The bar is called the Soggy Dollar because most people who get to this bar get there on a catamaran or on a sailboat, and they swim up to the beach. And when they pay, their money is wet from their bathing suit pocket, hence the name, the Soggy Dollar. You can get this drink all over the Caribbean now, as I said, but you can also find it in some New York City bars. If you want to go to sharpandhot.com, I have already put the recipe up there for you so that you can make it at home tonight. Okay, so now that we've been transformed with some waves and a little bit of rum, let's take our first listener question.
Hi, Emily. This is John from Southampton. And my question is, I have this recipe for fish steamed in banana leaves. And I was wondering, can I use the banana leaves from the ornamental banana plant I have in my house? Or do I have to go to the supermarket and search for banana leaves? Thank you.
So I've wondered this question myself. I have ornamental banana plants in a lot of my windows because my husband loves plants more than anything. And the truth is, all banana leaves will work for the treatment of steaming fish wrapped in a banana leaf. And for those who don't know, steaming fish, shrimp, scallops, even chicken in a packet made from banana leaves is a really easy way to feel like you've been swept away to the equator or move the equator a few degrees north into your own kitchen. So to answer the question, yes, you can use ornamental banana leaves from your house. The ornamental bananas that we have here as potted plants are the same bananas as those that are grown down south, but I'm going to give you a couple of reasons why you shouldn't. Number one being, once you've cut the leaves off your ornamental plant, you don't have them as an ornamental plant anymore, and I'm assuming that the reason you have that banana in a pot in your apartment in the first place is because you're trying to preserve some like green in your life during the winter season. And so for that reason alone, I wouldn't go and cut off all the leaves. And along those same lines, when the sun is this low in the sky, the plant is going to have a much harder time making more leaves, not nearly as fast as it does in the full summer sun. So at our house, we move the plants outside onto the deck and by the pool so that they can grow all summer long. And then we pull them inside for some greenery and hopefully to keep them all alive. the best option for finding banana leaves to cook with, even though you could use the ones in your house, is to find your local Asian or Latin market. I've had excellent luck in both of these types of supermarkets in the freezer section finding frozen banana leaf packets for like $3, as well as things that I wouldn't normally find anywhere else, like tamarind pulp or mangosteen pulp. And fascinatingly, because these are regular pantry ingredients to cultures all over the world, they're cheap enough to experiment with, even if that means adding like some dragon fruit to your plate as a garnish because you picked it up because it looks crazy and it was only 99 cents. And then you get home, you're like, I don't know what to do with this. That is why you have me, your chef, to answer your questions. The final reason to buy your culinary banana leaves is that they are nice and big when you get them in the freezer section. Most of us live in houses with ceilings in the 8 to 10 foot tall variety, and that's going to limit how big your banana leaves can grow at home. But buying banana leaves frozen gets you a nice spacious leaf to work on, you know, to work with and fold up without having to defoliate your plant at home that is probably under its current conditions struggling to stay alive anyway. So you buy your frozen packet of banana leaves and let them defrost on the counter a little bit until they're pliable, and then unfold them and take out one or two leaves and rewrap and refreeze the rest for the next time you want banana steamed fish. Because you don't actually eat the plant, it's merely a cooking vessel. You can refreeze this ingredient in a way that I wouldn't recommend for something like the fish or the vegetables. Like, I wouldn't say defrost all of the shrimp, take off what you need, and then freeze the rest. Like, that's going to make for mushy shrimp down the line. But the banana leaves, because you don't eat them, the texture doesn't really matter all that much or at all. So you'll take your banana leaf and you'll cut it into, like, depending on how big your pieces of fish are, let's say you're following the rule of thumb that a portion of protein is the size of a deck of playing cards. Cut your banana leaf so that it's like a foot long by however wide it is. You don't need to make it any narrower. And lay your piece of flaky white fish or scallops or shrimp, something like mahi-mahi or grouper would be perfect. Lay that in the center of the leaf. Sprinkle on some salt, sprinkle on some pepper. You can sprinkle on a little of the coconut milk that's in the can left over from what you just made with your painkiller. Maybe a few cilantro leaves, maybe some julienne red bell pepper, some freshly grated ginger, a couple dashes of like fish sauce or rice wine vinegar. What I'm trying to convey to you is whatever you put inside that flavor packet of the banana and the fish or the banana and the protein is super versatile. So whatever you have in the pantry, if you got 24 inches of snow and you don't feel like going out, use powdered ginger. If you are going to the store and you know that you want a particular flavor profile, use whatever you want, because whatever it is going to be really, really delicious. Fold up your banana leaf, kind of like an envelope, so that the fish is completely wrapped, and that's going to keep the liquid that comes out of the protein itself, and then also whatever you've added in the coconut milk variety, the rice wine variety, that's going to keep it inside the packet, and then put your banana leaf onto a cookie sheet and bake it. Or you'll want to either put it seam side down or secure it with a couple of toothpicks or tie it closed with some butcher's twine, which is probably the best option. And then put it on the cookie sheet, bake for 20 minutes at 350 degrees. You can also use a bamboo steamer if that's something that you already have, or you can throw them straight onto a low grill outside. My father used to grill all winter long. He would go outside to retrieve tuna steaks in a blizzard and come back with like little icicles hanging from his mustache and his eyebrows, and it's one of my like fondest childhood memories. But he also wouldn't let us use the dryer until things on the clothesline froze into like planks. And so there was one night when I came in and like a pile of jeans were across my arms like 2x4s, and then it was finally like, okay, I guess we can turn the dryer on. But the cold didn't dissuade him from turning on the grill, and you can put the banana leaves right onto the grill, not too high, and let them cook that way also. While the fish is cooking, make a quick salsa, some minced red onion, maybe some avocado, some jicama, maybe some diced watermelon, minced jalapeno or poblano pepper, or something even hotter if you want a little heat, a little bit of salt. This salsa is delicious with mango, and I'll tell you a little culinary confession. I use frozen mango all the time. The truth is, I don't have time to deal with mangoes in their skin. They've already been shipped, so it's not like I have the option of going to a farmer's market and getting fresh mango anyway. And then the amount of price difference, so it's slightly more expensive to buy them pre-diced. I make that up in time of not having to wash a sticky countertop or have a sticky toddler or have a sticky knife, and then there's like sticky everywhere. So I give you permission to buy frozen mango if you don't live in an area where mangoes are easily procured at the farmer's market. Finally, steam some rice in your rice cooker, a couple of cardamom pods, maybe a cinnamon stick, and voila, you have tropical fish dinner of equatorial origin. It's absolutely delicious. It's healthy. And I had a personal trainer once who told me that I had to give up eating coconut because it was a saturated fat, and I told her to get bent. That was never happening. So she made me run on the elliptical machine more. So yeah, all of these things are good for you. All of these things are healthy. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, another culinary question from the equator. Be right back. Sharp and Hot is brought to you by the generous support of Le Creuset. Respect for tradition and authenticity has been Le Creuset's guiding principle since 1925. Yet, their innovative designs and exceptional quality ensure that they remain relevant today. The company began in 1925 when a casting specialist and an enameling expert opened their foundries at the crossroads of transportation routes for iron, coke, and sand. That same year, the first French oven was produced, laying the foundation for what is now an extensive range of cookware and kitchen utensils. Today, Le Creuset provides the finest quality stainless steel, stoneware, silicon, enamel on steel, textiles, and forged hard anodized aluminum, as well as the colorful line of cast iron cookware. Visit LeCreuset.com and shop the full line of cookware, stoneware, bakeware, kitchen tools, wine accessories, and more. Heritage Radio Network thanks Le Creuset for their generous support. Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson. I'm also your equatorial tour guide to get us out of the winter doldrums. I've made another round of painkillers here that we're going to pour. And we're going to take another question, this one from about Southeast Asian cooking. Let's see.
Hi, Chef Emily. This is Monica from New Jersey. I was in Singapore a few years ago and ate something called carrot cake, which was delicious, but definitely not carrot or cake. So I'd like to make it at home if possible. Do you have any ideas on how to do that? Thanks.
So I have a wonderful couple of friends, and they have traveled to Singapore and came back and told us all about this dish, and they were able to recreate it at home. And I will say I ate it, and it is absolutely delicious and unlike anything I've ever had in the United States. But I don't know exactly how to do it myself, so I called in an expert, my friend and fellow chef Robert Donnie, who lives in Malaysia. And were it not 3 a.m. his time, I would ring him up right now. But alas, reading you his email, which started with, "Please don't call me at 3 a.m., his answer is in written form, which is the best I have. Chef Donnie says, carrot cake. Oh, and I misspoke. I called it turnip cake, but we're going to address what happened in this answer. Carrot cake is a prime example of how one English word can be used for many different species of a vegetable, fruit, or herb in different parts of the world. Case in point, carrot, using English, since this is where the show is airing from. We think of turnip as a root. However, in Asia, it can refer to jicama or a daikon radish. And so all of these things can be used in what is turnip cake or what is carrot cake. In Vietnam, they use daikon and prepare what they call bát chiên, a rice flour and daikon cake that is cubed and fried with eggs, spring onions, and seasoned with fish sauce and or soy sauce. That's Chef Donnie's response via email, which is pretty much exactly what I had at my friend's dinner party. I am putting a picture up right now on Sharp and Hot, which is a picture of Chef Donnie's finished carrot cake or turnip cake recipe. And then on Instagram, I'm going to put up a picture that I took at my local Asian food store so you can see the raw ingredient in the refrigerator case. That you'll see two packages right next to each other. They both have almost an identical drawing of the same vegetable, and one is labeled turnip and one is labeled radish. So if you're into this kind of food and you want to learn how to cook more of it, Chef Donnie wrote a really beautiful cookbook called Southeast Asian Flavors. I use it both as a recipe book and also as a resource because there are pages and pages of definitions and explanations, and there is a sister website, www.southeastasianflavors.com, and it is truly a full sensory experience, minus the taste part, everything, and you can recreate the smell and the taste in your own kitchen utilizing his work. I highly recommend both the site and the book. Links for all of this information is up on sharpandhot.com, as is the recipe for the painkiller. And I want to tell you a funny story about how the painkiller came to be the drink at my wedding, our signature cocktail. When my husband and I were dating, we decided to take a trip, again, courtesy of Uncle Amex. We were going to go scuba diving for 5 days. It was a 7-day long trip, and for 5 of those days, we were going to go scuba diving in Joost Van Dyke, which I said is a little teeny tiny island off of Tortola. And we booked our plane tickets, and just before we were supposed to fly out, the terrorists were revealed to be planning to blow up the plane using liquids. So now we know you're not allowed to bring anything liquid on a plane in a quantity greater than 3 ounces, but like 4 days after they busted these guys at the airport, we weren't allowed to bring on anything. We had to check all of our baggage, except I had a mesh bag in which I had my iPod and my phone, which at the time were two different things, and I had a couple of books, and I think that was it. Our passports. So we got on the giant Delta plane or whatever airline it was, and we flew to Puerto Rico, where we had to change planes to fly over to Tortola. And when we landed, we were supposed to have like a 2-hour layover in Puerto Rico, but because our big giant commercial jet got to the island fast, when we got off, the Caribbean Sun airline was like, "Come on, come on, we'll get you on the next plane." And I was like, "No, no, I'll wait for the plane I'm supposed to be on." And they were like, "No, no, no, it's okay." And I was like, "No, no, our bags are on that giant airplane, and there's no way they're going to make it onto that little plane as fast as we can run to catch it as it's about to take off in like 15 minutes. And the guy looked at me and he said, "Mommy, you in the Caribbean, relax." So, feeling the peer pressure, I relaxed and we got on the little plane and we hopped over to Tortola. And when we landed and all of the baggage came, sure enough, we had no bags. And so we waited for the plane that we were supposed to be on, and there were no bags. And we waited for the next plane, and there were no bags. And at this point, the sun is starting to set, and we have to get to our campground because we're camping. And all of our gear, all of our food, all of our clothing and toiletries and everything are not there, and we have to make a decision. Do we go to the campground anyway and see what's going to happen? Or do we sit in the airport and potentially waste our first day of scuba diving? And the decision is made that we're going to leave the airport. And it is a $100 cab ride to the other side of the island to hop on a ferry over to Joost. And the ferry captain assured us that this happens all the time. I'm not sure that I say he assured us in that he assured us we would get our bags. It's not reassuring that it happens all the time, that the luggage doesn't make it into the same time zone as the passengers. But we got there, and I was still a smoker at the time, and I had the wherewithal to purchase a carton of cigarettes in the airport before we left. And so the ferry captain, hearing our plight, stopped at his house before we left the dock on Tortola, and we met his wife, who gave us some sandwiches and bath towels out of their house. And then we got onto the ferry, and we puttered over to Joost Van Dyke, where we were introduced to the honor bar and our cabin, which we didn't need a tent, but it was rustic, to say the best description. And then we begged some food from some people and went to sleep. And the next morning, we woke up wearing the same clothes we'd landed in, and the captain of the diving ship pulled up into the beautiful white sand, like crescent straight out of a calendar, and he sent his dive captain, who was a kid who was living down there, sort of in exchange for a couch, in exchange for helping him run this dive operation. And he puttered up and he said, why don't you have any bathing suits on? And we told him what happened. He said, don't worry about it. Get on the boat. There's wetsuit. You'd be wearing a wetsuit anyway. You'll change in your wetsuit. No one's going to know the difference. And so that's what we did. And we went out to the point of this crescent, and I went scuba diving for the first time in my life, and it was just like every nature documentary I'd ever imagined. It was down a straight wall. It was absolutely beautiful. And because I was the first person, because I was the most novice person diving, I was the first person off the boat, and I was the first person to go down. And so there's no other human being below me, and it's just like, it looked just like a David Attenborough movie. And everyone left the boat. Captain, the dive, everybody was diving. So we dive, we swim around, we do the, you know, into the wall and back up the rope again. And because I'm the most novice, I surface first about 30 minutes, 20 minutes. I don't know. There's a calculation you're supposed to know about the oxygen, how long you're allowed to be underwater. Anyway, that amount of time passes. I'm the first person to surface. And I look around and there's no boat. And I think, where's the boat? And right behind me, the captain of the boat surfaces. He'd been on the dive with us. And he looks around and he looks at me and he says, where's the boat? I said, I don't know where the boat is, but all I know is that the only clothing I have is on that boat. And now I'm in the middle of the Caribbean Sea with nothing except a dive apparatus and a wetsuit. And he, the kid, the dive master surfaces, my husband surfaces, this other guy surfaces that was on the trip with us, and we all look around and realize the boat had not had enough anchor line dropped, and the anchor never touched the bottom, and it was caught in a current and on its way basically to Florida. And the captain of the ship instructed the three of us, the three paying guests, to swim to shore while he and the dive captain were going to catch the boat. And we looked to the Crescent Beach and thought, it can't be that. I mean, it's right there. How far could that possibly be? It turns out it was really, really far, but we swam the whole way back. And if you've ever swam for exercise, you know your heart rate gets really, really high and you get really, really hot and sweaty. And we crawl up onto the beach, which happens to be in front of a luxurious resort where like Beyonce and Jay-Z would be vacationing. And we are like frogmen pulling ourselves up on the sand, arm over arm, in the sweltering equatorial sun. And realize we can't take our wetsuits off to cool off because we have no bathing suits on underneath them. And these women who are like getting spa pedicures on their lounge chairs are looking at us like, what is going on? And so we catch our breath and we sit there, and Mark and I are looking at each other like, we are cursed. What is happening? And then all of a sudden the dive boat comes around the corner, engines roaring. They caught the boat. They pull up and the captain yells, you want to go again? And like any good adventurers, we said, for sure. And we swam back out to the boat and we had five more beautiful days of diving. I said earlier that you could use any rum you want to make a painkiller, and that is true. I had bought a carton of cigarettes because I knew I was going to have to barter for things. And one of them was for a bottle of rum called Paradise Rum, which I've never seen in the United States. And I think it was probably about $3 in the Caribbean. And when you flip the bottle around, it says, made in Kentucky. And I've never been more hungover than that next morning ever in my life. But we dove anyway, and we had a beautiful vacation, and we learned about the kindness of strangers and the beauty of the Caribbean culture and how people on vacation tend to be really, really nice. And when we arrived back at the airport to fly home, despite the security issue that lost our luggage in the first place, because it was, you know, the Caribbean, our luggage was just sitting in the middle of the airport. Like, the doors open and you walk in and it was just sitting there, like someone had pulled it off the baggage carousel and left it on the floor and had been there for 7 days. And I looked up at the flight board and there was a flight to New York and there was a flight to Paris. And I said to Mark, you want to just buy tickets to Paris? We have 7 days worth of luggage. And he said, no, that this story is entertaining enough just the way it is. So I hope that all of you feel like you've been transported away to a warm and luxurious place that plays steel drums and has waves breaking on white sand. The recipe for the painkiller is up at sharpandhot.com. If you have questions for me, you can call anytime and leave a question on the voicemail, 862-242-8599. Tweet me at Chef Emily P. facebook.com/sharpandhot. I'm going to put that picture up on Instagram. It is at Chef Emily P on Instagram. We are brought to you by the generous support of Le Creuset. Evan, thank you very much. I think this went pretty well, talking through the window to get all of our sounds just right. As always, we air live on heritageradionetwork.org. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And until next week, keep playing with fire and knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.